Good morning. The first case on our docket concerns the application for water rights of the city and county of Broomfield, and we are ready to hear from the appellants.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court. My name is Eric Plotkowski, and I'm here on behalf of Centennial Water Sanitation District and the City of Boulder. It's my intent to reserve some time at the end of my appeal, at the end of my argument. And to avoid any potential misunderstandings, I will be referring to appropriative rights of exchange, frequently by the shortened term exchange, to avoid cumbersome phraseology. This case concerns the request of the City and County of Broomfield for judicial confirmation of numerous conditional exchanges using substitute supplies Broomfield admittedly does not own or control. Under these claimed exchanges, Broomfield requests the right to divert water when there is a downstream call based on substitute supplies in which Broomfield has no legal interest. In its post-trial order, the Water Court concluded as a matter of law that a governmental applicant for a conditional appropriative right of exchange need not own all of its proposed substitute supplies at the time the decree is entered. The Water Court subsequently included in the decree and the corrected decree several substitute supplies that Broomfield does not own or control. The primary issue on appeal is whether the Water Court may confirm a conditional appropriative right of exchange, including the appropriation of exchange potential and the authorization to divert water when there is a downstream call based on substitute supplies the applicant does not own or control.
Isn't your basic contention that the appropriative method of getting conditional water rights doesn't apply at all to an exchange?
That's not quite right. Our basic contention is that when you analyze what an exchange really is, its effect on the stream, it really involves two primary considerations. One, there is the appropriation of exchange potential, which is the fact that the exchange dewaters the stream between the upstream point where water is diverted and the downstream point where a substitute supply is delivered to the stream. That part of the exchange is administered in priority. However, because an exchange also operates by definition upstream of a downstream calling right, it invokes principles regarding the diversion of water, in essence, out of priority. Because although an exchange operates in priority with respect to the system, it operates out of priority with respect to the downstream call.
I would have thought that Empire Lodge addresses this, if not directly, pretty much by analysis of the prior cases and the statutes, in that the exchange is between one source and another source. It's not replacement to the stream, as with augmentation plans, and there's long been a pre-existing statute authorizing an appropriative right of exchange. Isn't that correct?
Well, that's correct that there is a long line of statutes authorizing appropriative rights of exchange, and our position does not undermine those. What we are saying is that for the court to confirm this appropriative right of exchange, and because of how an exchange operates on the stream with respect to the fact that the stream is still over-appropriated and that there's a downstream call, the applicant should have to prove its ownership or control over the substitute supplies that will be delivered to the stream to authorize that exchange of water.
However, the court seems to have included that within the diligence period to firm up the right to the substitute supply and also condition the appropriative right exchange on actually providing the substitute supply. Isn't that correct as well?
Well, with respect to the diligence period, the inquiries into the conditional water rights in the diligence proceeding concern whether the applicant has been reasonably diligent, whether the water right still can and will be confirmed, and whether the water right still is not speculative. That doesn't address whether the applicant has proven its case in the first instance. It also doesn't address potential issues with respect to injury. In this case, for example, Broomfield has requested approval to add and such substitute supplies it does not own and control have been included in the decree, Not all of these substitute supplies will necessarily be the subject of a subsequent change proceeding, so there are issues that will not be addressed, such as regarding the amount of consumptive use available, and the quality won't be addressed in a subsequent change proceeding if one is needed. So the fact that there may be subsequent judicial proceedings with respect to these conditional appropriative rights of exchange does not address all of the concerns my clients have and does not prove Broomfield's case in the first
instance. But isn't that only true given sort of your view, as you just stated it, of the limited purpose of the review after the diligence period? That is, the trial of the water court's order seems to be to the contrary, indicating that the issues of injury will be addressed subsequently. Is that correct?
I did not read the court's order to state that in subsequent diligence proceedings, the entire appropriative right of exchange, including whether injury will result to other water users, will be open. Under this court's rulings in subsequent diligence cases, the issues are limited. The issues are limited whether the applicant has been reasonably diligent. There will also be the reality checks imposed by this court, whether the water right still can and will be completed with diligence, and whether the water right is still not speculative.
What about the terms and conditions of the decree, the last two pages, which indicate you have to have good water, live stream, so forth? Aren't those adequate?
Well, with respect to the terms and conditions, we have to analyze the terms and conditions with a little bit more particularity. There are general standard terms and conditions applied to almost all appropriative rights of exchange, including, for example, the live stream language. There are also some general standard terms and conditions with respect to the operation of the exchange. And if we look at the decree that was entered in this case, there are also particularized terms and conditions with respect to the specific substitute supplies. However, if we look at the substitute supplies which Broomfield owns and controls, there are terms and conditions directly applicable to those. However, it's notable that there are no such specific terms and conditions that apply to the substitute supplies Broomfield does not own or control, in large part because those substitute supplies essentially nothing is known about them beyond the name stated. And the name stated, for example, in paragraph 28.20.1 of the decree, additional shares in the Lupton Bottom Ditch Company. Under the rulings of this court, in particular Jacobucci, the specific water rights held in the name of the Lupton Bottom Ditch Company are owned by particular shareholders. So that doesn't identify specific water rights that can be analyzed for the purposes of terms and conditions to prevent injury.
Looks to me, however, what you're really saying at basic is that this has to be firmed up as an absolute water right from the outset, and that all the substitute supply water needs to be owned by Broomfield on hand and immediately usable. That's kind of contrary to the whole system of antedating a priority so you can develop a project. And isn't it true that the water court was very specific about its inquiry into whether or not there were ditch shares perhaps available and there had been prior transactions, as opposed to a group that the water court separated out, which was a group of no indication that the shares might become available?
With respect to the first part of the question, as I understood it, with respect to whether it can, in essence, be conditional appropriate rights of exchange, it's true that under the statute 3792.305.10, exchanges that are actually operated can receive an antedated priority. However, a water user who owns or controls the substitute supply can still receive a conditional exchange if the water user hasn't had a need to operate the exchange quite yet, if the water user is waiting for hydrological conditions to allow the operation, or, for example, if a water user has operated the exchange and exchanged water up to a reservoir but has not delivered water out of the reservoir to beneficial use, thereby making the water right absolute. So there are several situations in which a appropriate right of exchange could still be conditional, even if the applicant has to own or control the substitute supplies at the time the decree is entered. And I believe there might have been another part of that question that I was...
The other part of it is, aren't you really arguing that that with respect to the substitute supply, it actually needs to be totally owned, the change of water rights made, everything on hand and ready to go at the time the application is submitted to the water court for an appropriate right of exchange? It's just, it's difficult to see how the legislature would have intended that. And even in the augmentation arena, the legislature has recently authorized leased water that hasn't yet been acquired to be provided to augmentation plans. It seems that this hybrid of augmentation and a conditional right of exchange doesn't fit too smoothly with any of the 1969 Act provisions relating to exchange as opposed to augmentation plans. So I'm still wondering where in our case law this hybrid that you've urged the court to adopt exists.
Well, to address the first part of your question, once specific water rights are identified, they don't necessarily need to be already changed and already decreed. In fact, in this case, there were several substitute supplies that Broomfield owns and controls that have not been decreed for exchange, such as its lawn irrigation return flows. But the specific water right that's going to be used as the substitute supply to deliver water to the downstream senior call needs to be identified so that the water court and other water users don't have to speculate and try to assume unknown facts to evaluate potential injury. Now, with respect to the 1969 Act, if we look to 3792-3058, which was the recent enactment that allows a plan for augmentation, and it doesn't say a plan for augmentation including water exchange project, it allows a plan for augmentation to include procedures to allow additional or alternative sources of substitute supply to be included in the Aug Plan decree. Now, if we look at other parts of the 1969 Act, such as Section 302, Subsection 5, 305, Subsection 3A, and 305, Subsection 5, these sections all state plan for augmentation including exchange or including water exchange project. Now, that statutory analysis was the fundamental statutory analysis this court applied in the Florence versus Pueblo case, in which this court determined that the retained jurisdiction provision, which only refers to augmentation plans, only applies to augmentation plans and not necessarily to exchanges. So there is a basis in the 1969 Act for this. But that comes back to another point, which is that this is an issue of first impression for this court. So consequently, there's no, as we've all seem to have noted, there's no direct case law or statute directly on point. So we really need to look to the fundamental principles of that have applied to Colorado water law. And in particular,
well, the augmentation plan provisions of the 69 Act were an innovation. They refer to out-of-priority diversions. Exchange is in priority and seems to me consistent with the whole conditional water rights arena. And I think what you pointed out is an allowance by the legislature for out-of-priority plans to include water that might be acquired in the future, and somehow you argue that since the legislature specifically included that language, it must not have meant that when it passed the 1969 Act in the appropriative exchange capacity. So it seems like you're hooking on a totally different program that was innovative to apply some kind of flexibility to strict application of priority to the appropriative right of exchange, which has been an ongoing body of law. So I don't know that you've actually answered the question yet, but let's hear the rest of the arguments.
Well, if we look to how an exchange affects the stream, as this court has noted in numerous cases, augmentation plans and exchanges, as they affect the stream, look very similar. And it is true, and we are not arguing that appropriative rights of exchange do not operate outside of the priority system, as do augmentation plans. However, in both an augmentation plan and a conditional or an appropriate right of exchange, there's a downstream call. Consequently, all upstream water users have to cease diverting under their conditional water rights so that there's an increased supply to the downstream call. There's only two, there are two primary methods by which a water user can continue diversions. They can continue under an augmentation plan, or they can continue under an exchange. And under both, water is diverted upstream, despite the fact that there's a downstream call, and in both, a substitute supply is delivered to the downstream calling water right. The primary difference is that in the exchange reach, with an appropriate right of exchange, the stream flow is diminished, and that diminishment is administered in priority. That's the primary difference. Consequently, an exchange operates on the stream almost identical to an augmentation plan, but it also includes an appropriative aspect. That's really the basis of the hybrid water right argument.
I don't understand how your client is going to be injured if the exchange can't be operated and the state engineer can prevent it if the water isn't actually provided for the exchange at the time the exchange is made.
Well, with respect to injury, the primary argument with respect to injury is that there were no facts regarding the substitute supplies. As I previously pointed out, there are specific terms and conditions regarding the substitute supplies my clients knew about, and we were able to argue and oppose term and the convince the court to impose terms and conditions with respect to those substitute supplies. With respect to the substitute supplies Broomfield did not own or control, there were no operative facts. As Centennial's expert testified, it's a guessing game. We have named, for example, additional shares in the Lupton Bottom Ditch Company. Beyond that, questions regarding the duration of ownership, the quantity of water and flow rate and volume, when it would be available, the quality of water, these are all unknown aspects. And moreover, with respect to injury, there are no water cases in which injury is the only question. Be it a change of water right, a plan for augmentation, or a conditional water right, there's a burden of proof in addition to proving that the claims will not result in injury to other water users. So that's really an additional issue in this case. There are questions of injury and then questions of what an applicant must prove in the first instance in order to receive approval for this, for its claim. And another aspect which the court needs to consider with respect to the analogy between augmentation plans and exchanges, with respect to the fact that both, in essence, authorize diversions when there's a downstream call. If the court affirms the water court's decision in this case, there will really be an inconsistency in that an applicant can go to water court, and if the applicant requests approval for an augmentation plan, it has a high burden of proving its substitute supplies in the first instance. But if it goes to water court and styles its claim as an exchange, it's going to have a much lower burden, even though the effect on the river is highly similar, as this court has repeatedly acknowledged in the case law.
Can I interrupt you there just one second and ask you a question about what you mean exactly, something more specific
yes,
with regard to the burden? And maybe you could tie that into the statute for me. Maybe I'm just missing. I can sort of follow the argument, I think, if you're talking about, and I thought it was your primary suggestion, that unless you actually have control or ownership as a practical matter, you simply can't decide the question of injury. But what are the separate burdens that you're talking about in terms of the statute? You said there's a greater burden than simply being able to prove that there was no injury.
Well, for example, it's more of a general principle of law that an applicant for any water claim has an initial burden of proof in addition to proving that the claim will not result in injury. For example, in a change of water right, an applicant must prove what the water right is, the historical use of the water right. The applicant must have some legal right in the water right being changed. in addition to the no injury standard.
And all of those things go to various things that have to do with the change of water right, what the nature of what the water right is. You have to show that you have that water right up to that amount. You've made that consumptive use, whatever. What is there about an exchange that is the additional burden?
Well, with an exchange, one of the primary, if not the primary purpose of an exchange, is for a water user who has a downstream water supply to, in essence, move that water upstream without building a pipeline. Oftentimes, colloquially, parties say that they're diverting their downstream water right by exchange at the upstream point. And it's frequently said that the water right diverted upstream takes on the characteristics of the downstream water right. So it's really a way for the downstream water right, in essence, to be diverted upstream without building a pipeline or creating a physical, some other physical change in the diversion. And when you look at an exchange, the amount, the duration, everything about how much can be diverted at the upstream point is fully dependent on the substitute supply. For example, if I have a decreed exchange of 10 CFS, and that's what my decree says, and there's some priority date associated with that, but I'm only able to, at the time, deliver 5 CFS of substitute supply for 2 days. I'm only able to divert upstream by exchange at 5 CFS for 2 days. So everything about the exchange is contingent upon the substitute supply. And that's why the substitute supply is so important. And really, it ties back again to the similarity with an augmentation plan. An augmentation plan operates much in the same way, in which a water user may have an upstream point of diversion on the river or a well, and it's more convenient to divert at that point. And they have a substitute supply they want to use for augmentation downstream. And the amount of water they are able to divert depends on the substitute supply they return to the stream. It's very analogous. And this court has held recently in the State Engineer versus City of Aurora case that as part of the applicant's initial burden of proof for an augmentation plan, it must prove sufficient replacement water to allow those otherwise out of priority depletions. And although an exchange is administered in priority, especially with respect to the part of the stream that's to be watered, it can't be ignored that the diversion still happens despite the existence of a downstream call. And consequently, it is both in and out of priority when it diverts. Another aspect that should be considered by the court is the burden of both public and private appropriators to carry their burden of proving their claims for conditional water rights. As this court recently held in the second Pedosa case, unless an applicant owns or controls the substitute supply and there's some certainty about what that substitute supply is, really the fundamental element of what an exchange is, what water is actually being exchanged, is simply unknown and cannot be proven.
Well, that's one question I had about your client's position, because you represent two municipalities, and it would seem that the argument you're making is counter to their longer-term interests in some other case.
Well, the argument I'm making on behalf of my municipal water provider clients really is consistent with the historical practice that's been happening with respect to exchanges. Historically, water users, including municipal water providers, have acquired appropriate rights of exchange by going to court and having their exchanges decreed using the substitute supplies they own and control at the time. It's really a new sort of claim that has recently popped up in which water providers have gone to court and tried to gobble up a large amount of exchange potential based on substitute supplies they do not own and control. And in the past, when municipal water providers have acquired new substitute supplies they want to exchange, they've returned to court, as Broomfield can return to court here, and acquire additional exchanges with junior priorities. And I see that I have about 5 minutes left, and I would like to reserve that time unless there are additional questions.
Okay.
Thank you.
May it please the court, I'm Harvey Curtis, representing the city and county of Broomfield. With me today is David Keeter. This case is about Broomfield's reuse water system. Broomfield has a substantial system which allows reuse of effluent that would otherwise go downstream. The water is taken from Broomfield's wastewater treatment plant, treated, stored, and then used to irrigate parks, open space, athletic fields, and streetscapes. The water basically is the Windy Gap water. However, the Windy Gap water is not enough to do all the reuse watering that Broomfield plans. Accordingly, Broomfield, in a case this court decided earlier this year, began acquiring ditch rights in the Lower South Platte to utilize for its reuse system. This case involves an exchange which involves in part those reusable water rights in the Lower South Platte. What Broomfield plans to do is to divert upstream the effluent at its sewer plant, treat that water and use it for irrigation, and replace the water it's diverting upstream with water in the Lower South Platte. In the this saves non-potable water that is reused saves a potable fresh water that would otherwise be used for irrigation purposes. So that's the foundation on which we're here. The court below determined that a municipality's exchange could include substitute supplies obtained after entry of the exchange decree. And we believe that's supported by the law and evidence. This court may not have directly dealt with that point before, but there are two previous cases that we think may serve as guidance for the court. The first of these is the City of Denver versus Englewood, a 1992 case. This case involved a 1972 water adjudication for Denver, which gave Denver the right to exchange to its reservoirs upstream of where Chatfield is now. And the exchange source listed was, quote, water of any public stream, end quote. In 1992, the court determined that that definition included Colorado River water, including Trans Mountain water, which had been used then treated as effluent at the Metro Sewer Plant. The other case is a 1996 case, Thornton versus Bijou Irrigation District. In that case, Thornton had to acquire 15,000 acre feet of additional substitute supplies to complete its in-ditch exchange. The record as a whole showed a substantial probability that Thornton could and would complete this project with diligence within a reasonable time. In this case, our resume notice for the water court application stated the substitute supplies claimed were, quote, decreed water rights available for exchange upon on which all required returns, if any, have been paid. Decreed consumptive use water, effluent, and other sources approved by the division engineer. Prior to trial and settlement with various objectors, including Aurora and South Adams, Broomfield reduced that broad claim to the list of existing supplies, which it has, which are listed in Exhibit C to Broomfield's proposed decree, which is Trial Exhibit BR-9A. It also limited the future supplies to 10 specific supplies, which Broomfield had targeted, which are listed in paragraph 28T of that exhibit, BR-9A. Broomfield's decree also put a total cap on all exchanges to 5,100 acre feet in any 1 year, which the court approved. Broomfield also limited the exchange in any exchange reach. There were two reaches, one in the South Platte and one in Big Triad Creek, to 31 CFS, and the court approved those limits. 31 CFS amounts to 62 acre feet per day, which could have been 22,000 acre feet per year. So Broomfield substantially reduced its request by putting that cap on its exchanges. The court ruled, however, that Broomfield must prove a first step for each future supply and also must prove can and will for each future supply. The court found a first step and can and will for three of the future supplies, Aurora Effluent, additional left and bottom shares, and additional effluent from Consolidated Mutual Water Company.
And didn't the water court disagree with some other aspect of Broomfield challenges here, and that is somewhat in echoing this speculation argument, Gitch's, for which there's been no showing at the threshold that you'll be able to acquire any of the shares.
Yes, that's my burden here. The court denied 7 sources of supply because it found no first step and no canon will. And we believe the court misinterpreted case law in making that extension. The first step applies to the appropriation itself, which is the intent to appropriate the water in an overt first act, which can be the publication of the application itself to give evidence of that intent. And Broomfield here's first step included posting signs on the exchange reaches. It included publishing the application, and it included a memorandum from its city manager directing its employees and staff to go out and obtain these future supplies. If the first step is to apply, which we don't think it has in the past, to an appropriation, excuse me, to a substitute supply, then we believe we met that first step.
Thank you. I didn't understand from the order exactly what was different in terms of first step between the ones which were approved and the ones which weren't.
The first of all, no, there was no guidance going into this because this has never been decided before, but the water court decided that first step should be applied to each source of substitute supply. And for the 3 sources which the court did approve, it found a first step in canon will, because for the Aurora effluent, Broomfield was in negotiations to acquire effluent. In fact, it did shortly after the decree was entered in 2009. As to the left and bottom ditch additional shares, Broomfield was in negotiations to acquire shares at the time of the decree. And finally, with regard to the consolidated effluent, Broomfield had a contract to obtain additional effluent, and the court found those satisfied first step in canon will.
I guess you're saying, I'm sorry, I was just thinking it over, I guess you're saying implicitly then that unless it can be shown that you've actually taken steps to start purchasing these water rights, the court found there wasn't a first step.
That's correct. That's what the court found.
All right, and why do you think that's incorrect? You think that first step shouldn't be commingled or basically merged with the canon will analysis?
No, it's more basic than that.
Okay.
First step applies to the appropriation of the appropriative right of exchange itself. In other words, did you have the intent to appropriate the exchange? Did you have an overt act which showed others your intent to appropriate the exchange? The acquisition of a substitute supply is not an appropriation. Our position is the water court erred in treating the acquisition of a substitute supply in the future as initiating a water right. And we think the court was wrong in this.
Say that again, Curtis.
My mouth's a little dry.
The water court
applied the first step standard to acquisition of a substitute supply in the future by a municipality. The first step standard applies to initiating a water right. Beginning a water right so you can hold a place in line to complete the appropriation at a later date. That's what a conditional water right does. It allows you to go out and build the structures, acquire the land, and finish the project without losing your place in line for a priority.
But isn't the appropriation completely tied to the substitute supply? That is, how do you respond to the argument that the separation that you're making concerning the first step applying to the appropriation but not to the supply? But how do you respond to the argument that these things are interconnected and the very nature of the appropriation is defined, in fact, by the supply, the substitute supply?
The appropriation for the conditional appropriate right of exchange requires that you have water supplies available downstream to supply the senior water right, that there be water available upstream for you to divert in return for replacing the water downstream, and that the there'll be the water supply be of the same character in terms of quality and quantity to not injure the senior water rights downstream. Now, the part of that is the substitute supplies. The substitute supplies, the position that our opponents here have taken is that those have to be owned at the time of the decree. Our position is it's a conditional decree. You don't have to own all the substitute supplies at the time of the conditional decree. You have to have the intent to acquire them and the ability to use them, but you do not have to have them in place.
Well, isn't the argument, though, a little bit more subtle, because you didn't own anything, that you were just making contracts and entering into negotiations to own some of these substitute supplies, the ones that were approved, but the ones that weren't approved, you hadn't done even that.
Well, there's a list of 12 to 14 substitute supplies that we owned, and those are not in dispute. The dispute centered on the 10 supplies that we proposed to obtain after entry of the decree. And three of those we were in negotiations or had contracts for. The other seven we didn't.
The three that you were in negotiations for were approved.
Right.
And the seven weren't.
We're not.
So that's why I say it's a more subtle argument. You didn't actually, of the 10, three you were negotiating for, seven you weren't.
That's correct.
And so the judge differentiated between those things, saying, unless I can see that you're actually negotiating for this, I don't think that you have taken the first step. Why is that wrong?
Well, the first step, as I said, applies to the appropriation itself. I think what he was more likely dealing with was Cannon Will and Broomfield acquired these additional seven supplies. And he determined, because negotiations had not begun, that those could not be acquired. However, the evidence also showed that Broomfield had budgeted $22 million to acquire the additional supplies, that the city manager had instructed its staff to go out and acquire those supplies, and that Broomfield engineers had identified those seven supplies because they were within the exchange reaches where the exchange appropriations were decreed. And therefore, our position is the court erred in applying the first step standard at all, but also that Cannon Will had been proven by the fact that Broomfield had the wherewithal and the intention to finish the
program. I don't mean to be too hyper-technical, but I thought that Judge Klein said that Broomfield had not commissioned any reports regarding economic or engineering feasibility of obtaining these rights. So that's a finding of fact, right?
That's correct. He determined that Broomfield had not done any engineering on any specific shares at that time because it did not have any shares identified in these ditches. But
isn't that the same thing?
No, what I was saying.
Isn't something here?
It's a different fact. Our engineers testified that these exchanges, these sources, these seven sources worked for these exchanges, and they were within the exchange reaches.
I guess what we're trying to get to is, I mean, it's pretty clear that you wanted them.
We still do.
Yeah. The problem is, other than what's subjectively in your mind, how would there be any kind of objective showing that, like looking at this kind of negotiation, which would suggest to someone other than Broomfield, that this was something that you could and would?
What I've told you, the evidence was these were the targeted sources. The engineers said these sources would work. Broomfield hadn't the money budgeted to acquire these sources, and that they had been directed by their staff to acquire the sources.
Did anybody outside of Broomfield know any of this?
In terms of...
Broomfield wanted these things, the people who had these water sources?
Interesting question. I don't have an answer for that. I know that... you know, various people attend council meetings when these council resolutions pass, but I don't know if it was public knowledge or not.
Council, before you move on from this point, I just want to jump in and follow up on Justice Martinez's question. I mean, I get your argument that you think we should just look at the appropriation generally, not source by source, correct? But there does seem to be some sort of connection there between kind of looking generally at the appropriation and the sources. I guess you would agree with that. Isn't there some connection there? And if so, what did you want the Water Court to say about those sources? Just generally, you had an intent to acquire them, or tell me what you believe is the minimum that the court could say.
Well, what we asked the court to do and what it did for the three sources it did allow was to allow us, Broomfield, 12 years to acquire those sources, and then to bring those sources in through diligence proceedings where it would show non-injury to other water users and make those part of the decree. That's what we asked.
Right, but that was sufficient, I guess, is what you're saying, to have the three sources? I mean, what if you had not engaged in any negotiations at all? You came up with the 10, they were all like the 7. Would that have been sufficient?
Well, we looked at the BG case, which was decided in 1996, I think, Thornton came in with saying it would use its shares in the water supply and storage company, which is up in Larimer County, and any other source available for replacement. And the case got to trial. The judge reduced that claim to 17 pages of other sources. And our view was our 10 sources were much shorter than 17 pages, and also gave the objectors, whom we settled with, knowledge of what we were working on at the time we went to trial. And also gave them the opportunity as we acquired those sources to make sure that injury was prevented. So we thought that would protect other users, and we thought that was also allowed under Bijou. This court has never actually applied the first step to an individual source to substitute supply. That sort of came out of the blue at us. But Cannon Will, we thought we should show Cannon Will because Thornton had done that in its Bijou case, and we thought we did that. The trial court disagreed.
Well, Mr. Chris, what do you say to the argument that the diligence period does not adequately protect the issue of no injury, that the water court's conditions that were imposed on some of the exchange, the ones that he approved, contrast to no conditions that can be placed upon the other ones because that detail isn't known, and thereby leaves inadequate protection, and that some of the other concerns that would be addressed in an initial appropriation will not be in the diligence period. I think that's how I understand the argument anyway.
There are three levels of protection for the objectors. The first is in the decree itself, which requires the applicant to notify and get the approval of the water commissioner before operating the exchange, which allows the water commissioner to determine if water will be available to the downstream user and whether the water will be of the at the location it needs to be. The notification includes the source of the substitute supply, the location of the delivery of the substitute supply, the exchange 2 points, and where the substitute supply would be delivered by exchange upstream, and the duration of exchange, for example, is it 1 or 2 days, or 6 hours, or what. The water commissioner asked for 24 or 48 hours notice, and we agreed to give that notice so the water commissioner could determine that the exchange could be operated without injury to others. So that protects the other water users, and the water commissioner and his predecessor, water commissioner, both testified that this was administrable for the named additional 10 substitutes.
Now, let me just interject, and I want you to continue with that argument, but assuming that you're right, that it does protect, wouldn't you also have to agree that, however, since it's the water commissioner's determination, it's lesser protection than would be available if indeed it weren't just covered as part of the diligence process?
Well, in practice, I would say I wouldn't agree it's lesser protection, okay, because if the water commissioner says no, it's no, you aren't going to be able to do that. But the other two protections for the substitute supplies to be obtained post-decree were the fact that we had to bring these in through subsequent diligence proceedings, which we understood would require we prove non-injury and provide terms and conditions for the additional supplies. And
now, again, if I may interject, if I understood in the initial argument, the argument was made that that's not, that the water court decree did not provide for that. You're saying that it did. Can you be a little more specific?
Yes, paragraph 2820, where the court allowed us the three additional supplies. The court said we could not use the three additional supplies. This is at page 16 of the decree. The applicant shall not use the water rights listed in paragraphs 28.20.1 and 28.20.2 until use of these water rights for exchange or substitute supply has been approved by a decree of the water court for Water Division 1 or authorized by a substitute water supply plan or other statutory authority. So with regard to the Aurora effluent, which Boulder and Centennial were questioning a few minutes ago, we have to get approval by the water court to use that effluent in this exchange. And we believe that provision would also protect other users from the from any injury if we were allowed to have the other seven sources supply. And those were the terms and conditions we had negotiated with the other parties who were concerned with injury by the additional substitute supplies, the 12 years for the diligence period, and that paragraph requiring water court or approval as an SWSP, which is also subject to court review. So those are the three provisions we thought protected other users: the administrative provision, the diligence provisions, and the requirement for approvals. Our view is Boulder and Centennial are urging this court to determine as a matter of law that injury must always result when any future supplies are allowed by a municipality's decree to be sources of substitute supply. As I mentioned earlier, the court imposed terms and conditions on the existing sources and two of the three additional sources it did allow. There's the 51 head acre foot annual limit. Those three additional sources need to be obtained within 12 years of the final decree. And as I just mentioned, the decree provides that the substitute supplies cannot be allowed to be used until approved by a court decree, a substitute water supply plan, or other statutory authority. This allows other objectors a say in the use of the supplies in this exchange. We believe the court's findings as to non-injury are supported by the evidence, and therefore they should not be disturbed on appeal. I refer you to the Blackhawk Central City case in 2004. As the trial court found, allowing a municipality flexibility in developing additional water rights, including obtaining substitute supplies after entry of the decree, is allowed under EJU and other cases. Analogous findings appear in other cases of this court. In Blackhawk Central City, which I mentioned just a minute ago, the court found that Blackhawk could obtain the reservoir site needed for its appropriation after the decree was entered, since flexibility is needed to enable a municipality to bring its water right to fruition. In Thornton v. Bijou, which I mentioned several times, Thornton was allowed 40 years after entry of its decree to obtain 15,000 acre feet of additional substitute supplies for its in-ditch exchange. In N. Ray Gibbs, this court ruled that because Gibbs had a private right of condemnation, she had proven she can and will acquire a conditional water right located on her neighbor's property.
Well, I want to be clear about this argument.
Yes.
That Broomfield is not arguing that the provision of the Constitution and our cases having to do with municipal condemnation of agricultural rights is in any way involved in this case. I mean, you're not arguing the Gibbs authority for the proposition that the municipality may have a right of condemnation if it can't otherwise acquire by voluntary transaction the water it needs for these substitute supplies?
Well, we mentioned in our brief that Broomfield is a Article 20 city created under Section 10 of the Colorado Constitution, and it does have rights of condemnation. And we also mentioned that in the trial brief. So I think that issue
however
is part of proving can and will. But I'm not arguing anything about the statute regarding condemnation.
Fine. So you're not really placing that at issue here now, because your position is, even with respect to the seven supplies that the court didn't approve, that you would go about a voluntary acquisition of those shares?
Yes, sir. The point of the three cases I was discussing a minute ago is that where a future acquisition is necessary to perfect a water right, that as long as there is a substantial probability of obtaining the needed structure, the needed land, or the needed ditch company shares, the conditional water right can be decreed. In our case, Broomfield proved its intent to obtain the future supplies by the broad statement in the application, claiming all reusable sources by its city manager's directive, and by funding $22 million to obtain the supplies. Broomfield's officials testified that 12 years was a reasonable length of time to attain the additional supplies. The trial court's determination that Broomfield had the intention and could and would acquire the three additional supplies, which the trial court allowed, is supported by the evidence and should be affirmed as to those three supplies.
Mr. Curtis, can I ask you a question about the funding? What was there to guarantee that, or was there a guarantee testified to that the amount of money was set aside, like in a trust account, for 12 years? Or what? I don't quite understand that. Was it just, what was it? What's the nature of it?
Broomfield has a capital improvements. Broomfield has a capital improvements budget, which runs over several years, and $22 million was part of that capital improvements budget.
Something came up in 2 or 3 years. They could spend that money on something else if they needed it as an emergency.
You're speaking about the modern day. Yes, I suppose that is possible. But at the time, Broomfield had set aside the money for that purpose. Broomfield and Centennial argue that a plan of augmentation is almost an exchange. The right to exchange has existed since 1897 by statute. That statute is now in 3783.104. One can obtain a decree for an exchange. An exchange has a priority date once it is decreed. And plans of augmentation do not have priority dates. Plans of augmentation allow someone to divert out of priority. Plans of augmentation operate outside the priority system. Exchanges operate within the priority system. Centennial and Boulder rely on a statutory amendment in 2003 after the 2002 drought that allowed unnamed supplies to be added to decreed plans of augmentation. That does not determine the outcome of this case. The legislature has not spoken on that point with regard to exchanges. The court can determine that the additional future supplies for municipal exchange can be listed in the decree as we proposed and as the trial court did for the three supplies. This provides a municipality the protection of priority date while it expends the time and public treasure needed to bring its appropriation to fruition. This is the whole purpose of a conditional water right, that to allow a municipality to obtain the land, obtain the water, and spend the money is protective of the public treasury. In conclusion,
let me ask you this: is Broomfield's conditional appropriation for an exchange consistent with the two Pagosa decisions and the law that is contained and cited in those two cases?
I think so. The case which I'll summarize is Aurora versus a GJ partnership, where it discusses that a prospective appropriator undertaking a large-scale development needs to have the protection of the priority date before it goes out and spends the money. That's the point I was trying to make.
Talking about the planning horizon, the need for this appropriative right of exchange for Broomfield's water system.
The court found that we met those requirements of Pagosa, and that was contested in trial and has not been appealed. In conclusion, the trial court correctly found that a municipality should have the flexibility and be allowed by a decree to obtain specifically listed substitute supplies in the future for its exchanges. That determination should be affirmed. Augmentation plans are not exchanges, and the line between the two should be maintained. A plan of augmentation is not a water right. An exchange is a water right. Our position is the trial court should have ended after finding can and will for the appropriations themselves and finding a first step for the appropriations itself. This court had not done what the trial court did, which is extend the first step to each additional substitute source of supply. We believe Broomfield showed that it can and will acquire the additional supplies. It has budgeted the money. It's directed its personnel to acquire the water rights. The supplies have been identified. Broomfield testified these are reasonably necessary for the appropriations. And the future supplies selected are within the exchange reaches and can be utilized for the exchanges. Finally, there's no evidence of final denial, which is required in order to find there is no possible manner in which those supplies could be obtained. We believe there's a substantial probability the supplies can be obtained in the next 12 years as supported by the evidence, and we ask the trial court's denial of the 7 supplies be reversed. Thank you for your time.
May it please the court again. I'd like to first point out that the City of Thornton versus Bijou case is not precedent in this case. In Thornton v. Bijou, the City of Thornton acquired conditional appropriative rights of exchange on natural streams and in ditch exchanges. The provisions discussed in that opinion in which Thornton was authorized to add additional sources to the exchanges only applied to the in-ditch exchanges. Now, this is significant because in-ditch exchanges operate on a ditch system and not on the natural stream. Consequently, potential injury to other water users and speculation concerns are greatly diminished. And in the City of Thornton versus Bijou decision, it expressly stated that. Another thing I'd like to point out is regarding Justice Hyde's questions regarding the first step, the application of the first step to the exchanges. If you look at the decree in this case, Broomfield has requested approval for numerous exchanges. If you look at Exhibit B to the decree, there is an exchange matrix which lines up exchange to points where water is diverted and exchange from points where water is replaced to the stream. Now, to actually operate an exchange, you need an exchange to point where water is diverted, an exchange from point where water is returned, and the substitute supply to return the water. That's the water that is added to the stream. It's the combination, the unique combination of each of those three elements that makes an actual exchange happen. Now, if you look at Exhibit B to the decree, it's a large matrix, and Broomfield has numerous substitute supplies. Faced with this multitude of exchanges, the water court focused its analysis, its can and will analysis, and its first step analysis on the substitute supplies, which was judicially efficient. Another point to note is the argument proposed by Broomfield that an applicant does not have to own the substitute supply or the land or the exchange points to receive a conditional decree. There are numerous cases from this court in which an applicant has gone and received conditional decrees in which it does not have a current right of access to the diversion points. Now, the analogy of those cases to this case would be if Broomfield did not have current access to the exchange to points or the exchange from points. It's a real extension of those cases to say, well, not only to get a conditional right, do you not need to have a right of access to the diversion points or the points where you're returning water to the stream, but you don't even need to have a present legal right to the water you're actually exchanging. That's really a step beyond the current cases. Another point is with respect to the condemnation argument. Although Broomfield may have briefly raised its right of condemnation in its trial brief, there was no evidence at trial regarding condemnation. In fact, with Broomfield's first witness on the first day of trial on cross-examination, I asked Mr. Dan Mayo has Broomfield done any analysis of how much it would cost to condemn water rights in the Platteville ditch? And this is a significant question because, as I've mentioned previously, the water rights in the Platteville ditch are represented by specific shares and owned by numerous parties, including, as it's mentioned in the record, some governmental agencies. Mr. Curtis objected to the question as beyond the scope of direct, and the court sustained. Condemnation was not mentioned again until the reply brief on appeal. Now, this is particularly significant because several of the water rights that are listed as substitute supply that Broomfield does not own or control are owned by governmental agencies, in particular the Aurora and Arvada effluent. Also, it's well known that several of the water rights in these mutual ditch companies that Broomfield has targeted are owned by governmental agencies such as water conservancy districts. So the right of condemnation is not a silver bullet here, and in fact it raises more questions than it answers, and there's no record support in the record. Mr. Curtis's argument regarding paragraph 28.20 that Broomfield will have to come back and in diligence cases receive water court approval doesn't square with the plain text of that paragraph. The paragraph says, until these water rights for exchange or substitute supply has been approved by a decree of the Water Court for Water Division Number 1. If it's already been approved, and such as if it's effluent or if it's some previously changed ditch share, there's no opportunity whatsoever for other water users to raise issues regarding that. And with that, I see that my time is up.
On behalf of the court, I want to thank counsel for your arguments.